Welcome to another episode of My Journey Back, possibly to God. Today I'm joined by my very good friend, Nathan Daller, and we'll be discussing how to engage with someone struggling with doubt. Nathan reached out in such a meaningful way early on in my journey of faith, or crisis of faith, I guess you could say. He's a significant reason why I'm re-exploring faith and re-exploring Christianity. His friendship has meant so much to me. I hope you enjoy this discussion, and as always, thank you for listening. Welcome to another episode of My Journey Back. I am joined today by my very dear friend, Nathan Daller. Nathan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited. A little bit. I don't guess I've ever been on a podcast before, so I don't know what I'm going to say.
Yeah, me neither. So I'm new to it as well. So we'll stumble our way through. So today I want to talk about primarily how to engage someone who is either losing or has lost their faith. So starting in 2019, I started to really question a lot of things. And it was kind of a private journey for a while. But then in 2021, I started sharing some things publicly. I was mostly like confused, angry, frustrated, started posting a lot of things on social media. And several people reached out to me, which I deeply appreciate. But yeah, you reached out to me and we had several long conversations over breakfast. And I feel like you engaging with me the way you did is a significant reason why I'm, I guess, reconsidering Christianity or reconsidering God. It probably didn't feel like it at the time, but it really brought a lot of healing to me. And so, yeah, today I just want to talk about what that was like for us. I don't think either of us would claim to be experts on this topic at all.
No.
But yeah, we're just friends, and the way that you engaged with me really meant a lot. And so I thought we could just kind of talk about that, and hopefully people can glean some good from it.
I think it's fair to say that if you're watching this podcast and losing your faith, just call me and I'll solve these problems.
Here's the number. I'll put the number on the screen.
Right. Yeah. No, not at all. But this is a pretty cool topic, and I'm really honored to that you would even, first of all, that we had all the conversations, but then that you would reach out about this in this way. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I appreciate you coming on and being willing to talk about it.
Yeah.
So let's just jump right in. So I want to start out by asking, you know, what was your perspective kind of from the outside looking in? What were you seeing? What prompted you to reach out in the first place there?
I think it's probably important that people would understand, like, we had a relationship of some kind before all of this, you know, like we had sort of played together in church, you know, music and things like that. And then even had some similar interests with like photography, and, you know, we'd have some of these conversations or whatever. And then probably before, I'm trying to remember, I don't know the timeline exactly, but before that, you would say that you had maybe lost your faith. We had started having some conversations. I don't know if you remember the first breakfast we had was like at Belgian Waffle downtown Cincinnati. And yep. I remember leaving that conversation. Like we don't know that we talked a ton about too deep into faith, but we talked more about like life and even some church struggles and some things that, you know, maybe we were both looking at and facing. And I think there was a lot of just openness and honesty in that conversation, and maybe some others that maybe gave me the open door that whenever I saw it from, at least from my, you know, little spot on this side of the world, this side of this computer screen of Facebook, is like, I think I need to reach out. You know, it certainly came from a place of caring, obviously. I mean, we had a relationship and I cared about you. So I'd say that's probably the reason, and probably a little bit of background as to why I felt that way. I don't know that I just reach out to everyone that I ever see that's struggling, you know?
Right. Yeah. So I at first I felt, I guess, confused and angry. I think we were talking just about life, kind of early on in my journey, and part of the really dark parts of my story, I had kept pretty private at that point. Mm-hmm. And then later on started to open up more publicly. And that's really when our conversations took kind of a deeper dive. Yeah. So we were in marriage counseling, my wife and I. And I think that's some of the things that we were talking about.
Yeah.
Some stuff that I was learning there.
Yeah.
I don't want to get like super deep into everything that prompted my questions, but I'll say that in 2019, a lot of issues around grief started to come up for me around the death of my mom. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that I was burying so much of that grief. And then when I went to share that grief after, you know, being silent for like 25 plus years, the way it was responded to, I was ignored, condemned, told that I was being like childish, stuck in the past, disrespectful. And that caused me to like step back and start to really question like who I was, who like my family was, my parents, you know, my dad, that relationship. Mm-hmm. And then I began to like draw parallels to God and started to realize like I felt as if God was responding the same way. Like God felt very distant. And yeah, without going into it to a ton of detail, just to say like I was crashing emotionally, like just in such a dark place. I think maybe some people refer to it as like the dark night of the soul or whatever. It felt like God was gone. And when I tried to lean into God, it was almost like this kind of this dark figure coming out of the shadows with this disappointing gaze, telling me like, you know, you're approaching me in such a disrespectful, disobedient way. Like, I don't want nothing to do with you. And I think what I've really struggled with through the whole thing is, you know, if God is truly loving and truly cares for us, that, you know, why didn't this good God break through that misconception, I guess? And so that's, I guess, where things really started to fall apart for me. And that's like in that moment, you know, whenever I publicly posted, like I renounced my faith or whatever, that's whenever you really reached out and you're like, we need to talk. Like, I don't know what's going on. Like, we need to talk.
Yeah.
And I remember,
go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
I remember we maybe had met maybe once or twice before that, you know, I don't really know. And I remember like walking away from this conversation, like, wow, there's a lot there, you know, like again, not going into all the details, but just a lot of the just family dynamics and all the just crazy that you were dealing with. And even just like trying to sort through your marriage and how you react to life and how she reacts to life, just all these things, you know. And also a lot of we had kind of both talked about struggling with doubts about things. And, you know, I opened up some problems that I had and just things that I really struggle with as far as understanding. And then whenever you kind of made that big proclamation, I think maybe because of some of our conversations that I saw, I don't want to say through it as much as I say, like, I feel like I saw more than like anger and like this huge, like big statement that probably most people saw. I saw like pain and like hurt and like, and so for that reason, like I really cared, not like I'm going to prove a point or I'm going to make him right. But it's like, you know, my buddy's like just over there dying. And it's like really important that I show him that I care, you know, more than bring good answers or, you know, some great apologetic as to why you're wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to say again how much I appreciate all the people who reached out, especially at first there. But yeah, a lot of people were trying to like set me straight in a sense, you know, tell me like, no, you're wrong about this. You're wrong about that. Here's reality. Here's the truth. And like when we would meet up for breakfast, like you would just sit there and listen, and I would just like ramble for hours. Like we'd sit there for hours, and you would just like listen and let me talk. And I never felt like you were there to do anything other than just to listen and be there for me. So maybe would you be able to talk a little bit about that? Like the difference between, you know, people trying to like lay out some facts or set people straight versus just being there to listen.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I'll put this caveat out there. I don't know that I was being like ultra intentional, and I, you know, I knew we were going to have this conversation. So I've kind of put some thoughts in my mind, and maybe I'll be a little more generous to myself than what I actually was. But I think sometimes people, like, especially like something so personal as faith, you know, they're going to reach out probably again, because they care. And from their seat, they're watching you slip into hell, you know? And so it's like, no, I've got to set him right, or else, like, it's like, you know, we had a lady that was walking by our house yesterday, actually. And my kids, we were outside with our dog, and she had a dog. And so she was showing us some of these tricks or whatever. And we were kicking a ball around, and the dog goes running across the road because the ball went across the road and a car starts coming. And she just starts like losing her mind, like screaming at this dog. And it was like, the reality was she cared more about that dog than anything, but it didn't, like, anybody just looking on like, man, this person's a lunatic. But she's like worried this dog's going to get hit by a car. And I think a lot of what people probably were watching you is in their minds, like, you're going to get hit by a car. And they're just like, they don't even know how to respond. They're not responding logically or rationally or anything like that. It's just like pure panic. And so you can kind of understand maybe why, you know, that didn't maybe go well. And the dog certainly wasn't loving that she was screaming at him. You know, he's like, I'm just going to get the ball, you know, and probably you felt the same way. I think that people often, Liz and I were talking about this, and Liz is my wife. I mean, you know that, but women might be watching this, may not. Liz and I were talking, and she had a friend who they were kind of, this is a different scenario altogether, but they were like making some choices and some things in their lives. And she was like, just, she was so upset about it. And she's like, I was asking her why. And she said, well, she's like, if what they're saying is correct, then that means I'm wrong about something. And I have to, like, it brings me to a point of like I'm either right or I'm wrong. And that is a really defensive position. Right. Mm. And I think a lot of people are, maybe they don't want to be willing to go to that point where it's like, you know, particularly in our background, right? You know, we're pretty well raised with, we are the truth, we know the truth, and everything else is wrong. And like, that's kind of the foundation that everything's built on, is like, we are right. And so I think whenever it's really uncomfortable to put yourself in a position to say, like, you know what, maybe I don't own the market on all truth. Maybe I have truth, but maybe not all truth. And maybe I don't have complete truth. And I still feel this way. Like I'm open to truth. You know, I'm like, I don't feel like I've got the answer. So whenever somebody's sitting there and they've got all these questions, maybe I'm in a really dangerous place. I don't know, where it's like, I'm willing to listen to questions. I'm willing to listen and learn something, as opposed to approach it with, I've got the answers. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people feel threatened when they're watching someone else doubt. Like,
well, it's
thinking,
not just doubt, right? It's doubting what they believe.
Right.
You know, so yeah. It's like, it's either you're right or I'm right. So
yeah,
that's a lot different than just be like, well, I mean, if I see like some Buddhist, for example, really struggling with their faith, you know, it doesn't really directly affect me that much. But if, you know, we're in the same church, and you're like, this is wrong, well then, whoa, you know, now I've got to mentally do something. And that's right. Uncomfortable.
Yeah. 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 I think, you know, believing that we have the truth is a, like you said, it's, it's a comforting feeling, or at least to have that questioned is uncomfortable. And people push back against that uncomfortable feeling, often in these very defensive and protective ways, almost to the point where, like, they will tear someone else down or attack them in order to protect themselves from doubting their own beliefs or something.
Yeah. Did you have people that were like, I mean, obviously there's people that reached out, and then there's people that didn't reach out. Did you feel strongly about maybe the people that didn't reach out, just, you know, in the same way? Well, 'cause I'm thinking, like, you know, it would be interesting, you know, you could have maybe this visceral emotion because somebody's like attacking you, but then, like, you could almost feel like just as strongly somebody didn't care enough to say anything, you know?
Yeah, that really strikes at the heart of this sense of, like, anxiety or panic that's, like, just with me now. I'd never felt up until, you know, a few years ago when I started going through these things. But the lack of response from some people, I think, is what really, really crushed me, because I felt like I thought they would be there for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my, you know, when I hit my lowest low, essentially, they just checked out. Yeah. One person in particular, who was just very important to my spiritual formation, I guess, like a second father to me, really, hasn't reached out at all. And I've reached out to that person a couple times, and I will admit, when I reached out, I was angry.
Sure.
And I said some really hurtful things. I sent them a text, just, and it was probably, like, out of the blue for them, but I at least expected, you know, them to reach out and be like, what is going on here? This is, like, this is out of character for you. What's
yeah.
And instead it was like, I don't know what was going on in their mind, but they just haven't responded at all. And then other people who were very, very close to me personally, to my spiritual formation, they've engaged some, but it's been really difficult. Mostly they've kind of ignored me, and I've, like, demanded the conversations almost. And then it turns into just a lot of frustration and anger on both parts, really. And I think that kind of gets back to what you were saying, where, like, they're having their world kind of questioned as well. And rather than letting us explore that together, they kind of push back and get real defensive and protective of themselves.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's where a lot of that was coming from, which at first, though, I felt so hurt. Where now I'm trying to offer grace, you know, I'm trying. I don't know how good I'm doing at that.
Well, but, too, it's like, also, I mean, think about, like, the Ukraine war, right? It's like, I mean, whenever Russia invades Ukraine war, my wife's, like, out, like, buying bottles of water and, you know, extra Pop-Tarts or whatever, you know, it's like, oh no, you know, it's a big deal. But it's like, if you ignore it, it goes away, you know? And I think sometimes people do that just out of, like, a defense. Like, if I just ignore him, like, it goes, I don't have to deal with it anymore, you know? So it's like, the Ukraine war is not in the news anymore too much. I mean, you know, every now and then you'll see a picture of a tank or something, but it's like, that, I didn't know that's even happening. And my wife has long since stopped buying extra bottled water to put in our basement, you know? And it's because it's like, you ignore it, it just kind of goes away. And then also, I think, like, for you particularly, like, you know, in our conversations, I mean, you're well-read, you're extremely articulate, you're extremely smart. And so, like, I'm afraid to get into an argument with you because I'm probably going to lose just on a pure logical basis. You know, I mean, I'm a nice guy and you're a nice guy, but just, like, we break it down logically, I'm like, oh man, he can logic circles around me, you know? And I think probably people are very afraid of that. And, like, what if I say something wrong, you know, and I send him to hell even faster, you know?
Yeah.
As opposed to just embrace the unknown a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Or be willing to just sit there with them in their pain. Like, I remember just kind of unloading on you. Like, I was reading, like, Bart Ehrman and all these other, like, counter-apologetics guys who just, I mean, they make you think, at least. And I was already in this really hurting place doubting a lot. And then I start to read Bart Ehrman and I kind of unloaded a lot of this stuff on you. And you were like, I don't know how to respond to that. I don't know. I still believe, you know, but I don't know how to respond to that. But like, I'm going to sit here and listen. And so you were like willing to at least sit there with me, you know, whereas there was someone else that, you know, I've been trying to draw into this journey from the very beginning and they've been kind of resistant. Like I asked them, like, will you listen to some of these lectures, read some of these books? And they were really resistant. And then finally they agreed, okay, I'll listen to a couple lectures. And they kind of just dismissed a lot of the arguments. Like, yeah, I don't believe that. You're wrong. He's wrong. The end of it. And it was like, that's not really giving me any answers here. And I think he felt like he had to give answers, which was probably why he pulled away, because he didn't have them. Whereas I think when I was, you know, when we were talking about things, you were like, yeah, I don't have answers, but I'm not going anywhere either. And right. And that was, it just kind of, I don't know, it kind of brought like a sense of peace. Like I felt seen and heard. My doubts were like validated. Yeah, it was just a very different approach than that kind of defensive posture.
I don't know exactly how your format is on your podcast, but one of the things you had mentioned talking about was like struggling to just sit with people, you know, in pain. And I was thinking about kind of my past. You know, I was a funeral director in Balmer, and I lived in that world. And I think, you know, the human psyche it's just bred inside of us. That's like, you resist pain or uncomfortable, whether emotional or, you know, physical. I mean, you know, it's like, whatever the pain is, like, get away from it. And I think a lot of people just respond, you know, like that's just their natural go-to response. And maybe because of, you know, I mean, I would sit with people in their darkest days of their life. You know, I would go to people's homes and their mom's laying on the bed dead, or they come home and find their dad laying, you know, he just dropped over dead. And I would be there in that moment. And so I don't, it's not that I like sitting in those uncomfortable places, but I feel like maybe comfortable in that setting. And so like you sitting there, and even, you know, ironically, like my job now, like somebody has some bad insurance claim issue, like they can call and yell and scream. And it's like, I can kind of work through, like, they're not yelling at me or what, you know, or whatever. It's like, I can kind of process that fairly well, I think. And maybe that helps me or helped me in our situation, where it's like, I'm not personally feeling threatened. I'm just kind of allowing you to work through. And like I said, from the beginning, like even your huge, big, you know, declaration, you know, there is no God, you know, like, I'm not sure that I still believe you believe that. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I, you know, we've talked about that, you know, it's like, no, Joe, you're going to get there. It's just going to take some time. You're just working through a lot of stuff. And I don't know. I remember actually one of my professors in mortuary school, she talked a lot about, you know, everybody's scared to death to know what to say. And, you know, this correlates so closely with kind of losing your faith is just as big of a deal. You know, it's a huge deal, very similar to like losing a loved one, right? People, how do they respond? It are very similar. And, you know, people just go through all anxiety. Like they're in the line, you know, they're the visitation, like, oh man, 10 more people and I got to say something, you know, like 8 more people and I got to say something. I get up there and it's like, what am I going to say? And people have a ton of anxiety about that. And I remember her talking like, you can't say anything that's going to take away the pain. You know, you're not going to do anything or say anything that's going to fix a situation. They don't expect that. And they don't even really want that. You can cause harm by saying stupid things, you know, or by saying hurtful things, you know, this is what God wanted. You know, isn't it so good that God has a plan and you're all this, he's like, that's not the time. You know, I'm not sure, you know, you can say harmful things, but you really can't say anything helpful. But what you can do is you can say, I'm sorry. And I'm here and I care. And that's really all you have to offer. But ironically, that's like, that is enough. You know, I remember her talking about that, you know, like whenever someone's sitting there in deep pain just being there with them and showing that you care is actually enough. And you kind of alluded to that, right? You know, it's funny that, I mean, this is kind of a weird thing to say, but it's kind of funny that you saw me as like a person that was like very helpful. And it's like, well, I didn't do anything. You know, I didn't provide any good answers. I just listened, you know, but that was actually enough in that moment, you know?
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, to a lot of sense. Like I've been reading Kurt Thompson. He's one of my favorite authors. And
I've been mentoring Kurt for some time now, so.
yeah. Actually, now that I'm saying this, it might have been Adam Young who I heard this from. He has a podcast called The Place We Find Ourselves. Those have been two big influences in my life. But they were talking about how, they were talking about the verse about like sharing one another's burdens, and how when you sit with someone in their pain, it requires you to feel that pain as well. Like they're literally sharing that with you, and you were like being willing to have that pain shared with you.
Yeah.
And so you'd mentioned that you were not really comfortable like sitting with people in their pain, but like I get kind of comfortable in that situation, I guess. And
I wouldn't say I enjoyed it, but it was like, I feel comfortable in that moment.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I guess the way that I would maybe say that is you seem willing to experience pain. You seem willing to sit with that and just let it exist without trying to, like you said, ignore it or avoid it or say dumb things to suppress it, you know.
Yeah.
Just willing to let it exist. Let it and I think
it just
think
is
when you and I think when you let it exist like that, it's communicating something to the other person, like, wow, you see me. You see that I'm hurting, and it's like this emotional embrace, like this emotional hug, to just let that pain exist and let them know that, I don't know, you're there to experience it with them as best you can. And it's not something anyone enjoys at all, but like you were saying, we try to protect ourselves from pain. And so I think a big part of like helping someone heal or showing empathy is being willing to sit with pain.
Yeah.
And that's something that, like, you know, we've had a lot of conversations just about, like, you know, our personal lives, our marriage, how we respond to tension. And I think I'm very much the kind of person who like runs from pain. You know, if there's tension in my marriage, I'll go to work, you know, I'll jump into one of my hobbies, I'll go fishing, I'll play my guitar. Like, if I can just give this a few days and come back, it'll be gone. You know, I won't have to deal with
the Ukraine war, right? You just, if you ignore it, it will go away.
Yeah. And my wife is actually the very opposite. She's like, if we ignore this, it's just going to continue to grow. And that caused that was
my,
like,
my wife's the same way. Fortunately or unfortunately.
Yeah. It caused so much tension in our marriage, you know, because any little, I mean, we had a great marriage, but any little issue I was avoiding, and she was like, hey, that's going to ruin our marriage. And if she would step in and be like, we need to talk about this, I'd be like, that's going to ruin our marriage. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so being able to like see past those behaviors or see deeper than those behaviors and see like what we're both actually feeling and the pain that we're responding to helps us engage in a much better way. And I think like what you were saying, how you could see through a lot of that anger and hatred and you could see the pain behind it. It reminds me of something that a pastor said to me, and it's a pastor from the church circles that we grew up in. And I feel like this is kind of maybe out of character for pastors from that church group. But like, I forget what I was posting, but I was like ranting about something, just angry.
Hang on. And you posted a rant? I'm just kidding.
What? No.
No, it can't be.
No. I feel like that's all I do these days.
No, it's good. Keep them coming.
Yeah. And he said something along the lines of, hate is not the opposite of love. Apathy is. And what he was meaning by that was, like, you're angry at God. You hate God right now because you feel like God is distant from you.
Right.
And you are actually desiring to feel God close to you, and you don't. And so you're angry. And so that's actually more revealing of your love for God. Like, if you didn't love God, then
who cares?
Who cares? You'd be apathetic to the whole thing. But the fact that you're angry, and
that's good.
Like, yeah. And it reminded me of another leader within that same church group who anyone from that church group would recognize this name. But he reached out to me and he said, "You've had a false representation of God portrayed to you. And so this phase of atheism is probably a necessary part of your journey in order to let this false God die so that the true God can show through." But when both of those people reached out to me with those comments, it was like all of the energy behind my anger and hatred was just gone. I felt seen on this deep level.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I read Kurt Thompson more and more, like when we feel truly seen like that on those deep levels, it really brings this healing. And I think a big part of my struggle then and even now is, like you had mentioned, some people have pulled away. Some people, like, very, very close to my story have pulled away and distanced themselves. And it leaves me, I can't separate their response from like how I feel God's responding. I feel like God's doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And Kurt Thompson, I'm going to try to pull this quote from memory here. It said something like, "Doubt, though concerned with facts, is not primarily about them. It's more about our sense of connection, safety, and security," something like that. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer even said something. He was talking about something very different. He was talking about feeling guilty for our sins. And he was saying we see our sin as it truly is when we confess it to someone else, because now we're not able to, like, excuse it and justify it. It's like out in the open now, and now we see it for how. And what he said was, we see the face of God through the face of our brother, or something along those lines. And so even though he was talking about something kind of different there, it gets to that idea that the way that we experience God is really dependent on the relationships we have with people. It can be really hard, I think, to have, especially Christian people in your life, like, pull away and fail you in those ways, and then still feel like God's there for you.
Like the God people, right? I mean, it's like,
yeah,
there should be a good representation of God.
Yeah.
That's actually that's a very scary, I mean, that's really petrifying to think about, you know, like I am showing God to people, you know, everywhere I go. That's quite a word.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, the church background that we came from, it was, you know, like you said, like, we're right, everyone else is wrong. We have the truth. And we also come from a very, like, Wesleyan background. They teach this doctrine of entire sanctification, where, you know, if you profess that, you've kind of attained this, like, ultimate spiritual level. And so, like, I always felt like, you know, I was trying to get there and just never could. So if I failed, that was just expected, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, those people, like, almost couldn't fail. And when they did fail, it was like, I don't know how to extend grace to you, or I don't know how to separate you from God. Whereas, you know, I'm sure every doctrine has its, or every theology has its challenges. But, you know, if we could, I think, acknowledge more that, you know, we do fail, and we can extend grace to each other. And that when we do fail, that wasn't God, you know?
Yeah.
I think when those key people in our lives do fail us, we can maybe step back and say, yeah, they failed. That's not God. But when they kind of hold themselves up on this such a perfect level, I think it can be difficult, maybe, to, I think those parallels are drawn much, much tighter, I think, maybe.
It is so interesting, you know, like religion particularly, it's just so, it's such a hot button, if you will, you know, and again, like our background, but you can go way, way more broad than our immediate background. And like religion tends to, people like to say they're right and the other guy's wrong. I mean, that's just, that's kind of the nature of religion in it, you know.
Yeah.
But kind of more to the more specific point of kind of this episode or whatever is like, you know, when you're sitting with somebody and they're working through all this and it's like they're just shooting holes or they're questioning or, you know, fighting all these ideas. I remember something that so I worked, it doesn't matter. But anyways, Dr. Mike Avery, you know him. Probably people watching this would know him. There was a scenario, he was my boss, in which I was kind of being accused of some things, you know, that were not true. And I remember him telling me, if you just are always telling the truth, which he was defending me in this moment, because I had been. So if you'll always just tell the truth, you don't have to have a good memory. Because truth will just stand on its own. And truth just is what it is. And I think, you know, like when you started asking all these questions or all these things that I maybe didn't have good answers to, or, you know, I wish I did, but I don't. And probably there are probably much smarter people that could just solve all your problems for you. I'm sorry you talked to me, but I remember that phrase kind of being in the back of my mind a lot. And it was like this idea that he can explore this as deep as he wants to, and he can question everything he wants to, because really what he believes or where his questions are doesn't actually change anything, because truth is what it is. And you don't have to like, I don't have to like manipulate truth or create truth or work up truth. It's like, it's not even mine. There are times to defend truth, of course, but I mean, in those moments, I think we just get so focused on like that conversation of winning an argument or you know, mm-hmm. And it's like, I can't lose this. It's like, no, like truth, it just is what it is. You don't have to have a good memory, because it just, truth always is. And I think that when you're working with somebody, or not working with them, but you know what I mean? When you're sitting in that moment, like, it's not my truth even to defend. Like, I don't have to figure that out. And I think that puts me in a much more relaxed position to just listen, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I've really appreciated Mike Avery. He was, used to be president of God's Bible School there in Cincinnati. And when he was there, he wrote a book called The Call: Essays to the Conservative Holiness Movement. And Larry Smith was a co-author of it. And in that book, in that book, he said something along the lines of, like, people from his generation tend towards like very black and white thinking. It's either right or wrong. Right. And they like the rules. They don't mind following the rules. The rules keep them safe. And he was saying that there's a lot of, like, the young people, which at the time that he wrote that book, he would have been referring to people my age, like, they're asking a lot of these questions, and the older generations are often accusing them of like being rebellious or like trying to attack or tear down the Bible or God or something along those lines. And he's like, this is one area where the group that he was writing this book to, like, this is one area where we've always struggled. Like, you have to let people ask these questions. The Bible can stand on its own.
Right.
You know, I have questions about, you know, if the Bible truly can stand on its own.
Sure.
But like, that's something that he believes. And so he's not afraid of those questions. Doesn't feel challenged or threatened by them, even if he doesn't have the answers. There was another pastor who, when things were really starting to fall apart for me, this pastor was there, like, in such a meaningful way. I just can't say enough good things about him and how much I appreciate him. We had breakfast several times, but that was all in the context of like me still believing. But then once it shifted from like, I'm having these issues in my marriage, I'm having these issues with my dad, I'm having these life issues, whatever. Whenever it shifted from that to doubt, I remember sitting there with him at breakfast and shared a few of my questions. And he kind of started frantically flipping through the Bible, like searching for answers. Right. And I'm not saying anything bad about him, because like I said, I deeply, deeply appreciate this man. But yeah, just not knowing how to engage with those really hard questions, you know? And sometimes you just kind of have to just let them exist and let the mystery exist, I think.
I'm not a pastor. I've never been one, but I'm sure that probably is a very scary position. Like, here I am, the man of the cloth, and I needed to have an answer right away. You know, it's like, that's a lot of pressure, I'm sure, too. But yeah, I mean, the other thing is, and it's so interesting, you know, just in our conversations, how you would be like all over the map. I mean, be like, God doesn't exist. This is all just a joke. There's no hope. There's, you know, you die, nothing. To the next is like, no, there's got to be something. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, no, there's, you know, we have all, you know, like every human in the course of history has had some meaning, longing for something. You know, it's like, there's got to be something there, you know. And, you know, to say that, you haven't settled on kind of what you think or where your truth is, if you will. But again, whatever is, and I'm not here to make a statement one way or the other, but whatever is doesn't change with our questions. And to the kind of the broader or the more specific point of this conversation is, none of those answers mattered really in that moment. You were, again, I come back to that, like, you were reeling, like you needed a place to yell and scream, and like God was a pretty good target, you know. And you know, we talked a lot about how probably some of that was maybe even, you know, like misdirected, like you're trying to actually yell and scream at other people, but like it's easy to put a God name on there, but it's actually probably directed somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's okay. Like if you're really questioning, and that was the other thing I wanted to actually say this when I was thinking about this, from the very first conversation we ever had, like to probably the very last breakfast we've ever had, your statements have been all over the map as far as like what is or isn't or whatever, but your heart has never changed. And like your heart is like one that desires real and genuine and truth, and like you're searching desperately. And I told you this, and I still believe this, like I've prayed and asked God, like, why wouldn't you just like lightning bolt him? Like he's clearly looking, you know, like, you know. And I'm like, well, maybe God doesn't exist, you know, like maybe he should lightning bolt Joe, you know. But it's like, I don't know what this journey in God's, how he thinks or operates is for you. And I don't know what this is all about, but I do believe that you'll end up in a good place, you know. But there's so much other things that are like in the way that are clouding who God even is, that maybe God's letting you work through all this so that whenever you do get a picture of him, it's a much more realistic, beautiful picture of who God is. I don't know.
Yeah.
And again, now I think we're more just having a breakfast conversation than we are talking about the sitting down with somebody who's, you know, struggling. But anyways.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. That kind of gets back to, you know, I really think the way to engage with someone is relational. Like it's not about.
Yeah.
It always ends up like facts or what is truth or like doubt. Like those, of course, come up. Like that's. But I think, you know, especially after reading Kurt Thompson, like it all has to do with relationship. Right. And doubt is spawned when relationship is questioned. And as long as that relationship is strong, I just feel like that's the primary focus. And I think people want to come with answers. They feel offended when their beliefs are attacked, or you know, that they're afraid because they don't have the answers or whatever it is. I think the key to it is just like maintaining relationship trying to see past the behaviors or the anger or the hate. I've had like several people say things along the lines of, you know, what sin is it that you're not wanting to give up? Like, I know that's where this is all coming from, you know? Yeah.
That's one of those things you probably shouldn't say in the visitation line.
Yeah. Or, you know, something to that effect. You know, maybe they won't say it directly to me. It's you know, well, usually people struggle with these things because there's some hidden thing.
Yeah.
And
you just want to do the one thing that you're wanting to do, aren't you, Josie?
Yeah.
All this, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And you had mentioned how perhaps my emotional energy is misdirected. I think that gets back again to that relational thing. You know, one relationship in particular was ruptured, one that was, you know, just super, super close to me. And I don't want to say that I'm attacking their faith to hurt them because I think it's more, like my questions of faith are more personal than that because of the parallels we draw. Like, I do feel like God is just absent or is pulled away. But yeah, I think there's an element to that perhaps where maybe that's part of what's preventing me from leaning back into God. Because, you know, from an apologetic standpoint or from a whatever fact-based intellectual standpoint, I mean, there's no proving God's existence or disproving it. Like the atheist and the Christian, like you can just go back and forth
right
for no end.
Ad nauseam, right?
Yeah. But I do think like there's really good, reasonable beliefs. And so like if you're sort of caught in the balance, like, okay, this might be true, that might be true, not sure. Like what then do I like hope to be true or what gives more meaning for my life? And yeah, you know, to believe that there's someone out there who sees me and loves me, like, yeah, that gives me more meaning. I don't want to just believe that this is it and it's over and there's no meaning to anything, except what I can generate in and of myself, which just doesn't seem adequate or whatever.
Right.
So, like, you know, if I was stranded on an island and no one else was around and no one could see, I might pray or I might go to church or what, you know, but it's like,
yeah,
no, that person's watching and I'm not giving them that benefit. I'm not giving them that comfort when they've caused me this much pain.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And honestly, I mean, I don't want to interrupt, but we talked about this and I know kind of where you're at, but that a lot of was kind of what started this whole journey,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like, this inner turmoil and like it like you probably never, I don't even know who these books are. You always mention them, they're wonderful and you're so smart and read so well, but like the anti-God apologist, whatever you call those, you know, like you probably wouldn't have stumbled into these books had you not been like maybe trying to figure some of this out. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And I'm not saying that, I don't know. Anyways. But yeah, it's like it almost like kind of comes back full circle to like,
yep. Yeah.
Which is why I have said from the beginning, like I thought a lot of your statements and a lot of your questions are a whole lot less about God than they are other things. And it's just God is a tangent to go down. And that's why I believe that as you're healing and you're processing all this, and it's like, you know, just even talking to you today is like the difference between some of those first conversations and now is quite stark. Like, that's why I think you'll end up back in a really good spot, but it's going to take time. And that's not, it's not for me to rush or for anybody else to rush, you know,
yeah.
But I do believe that. I do believe that. I just don't know what that's going to look like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like that one relationship sent me down all these rabbit holes. The rupture in that one relationship. And I feel like the tension that remains is a significant reason why I find it. I don't want to say that I'm resistant to leaning in, but the reason why it feels, I don't know the right words, like threatening or scary. I went to the Grace Story Men's Conference last year. And that was the first church type service I'd been to in several years. And I kind of just sat through the worship music, you know, and the praying or whatever, and just tried to listen more for the like psychological or therapeutic kind of conversations they were having.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. then like the religious aspect, I was trying to tune out for the most part. But in the very last service, Nate Davison, who hosts their podcast, got up and gave a sermon. And I can't even remember what the sermon was about, something about, you know, how great God is or whatever. But at the end, he was talking about how God feels like threatening and scary or intimidating or whatever. And he said, imagine those of you who are fathers, imagine your kid like running up to you. You get home from work and they run in and they raise their arms up to you because they want you to pick them up and hold them and play with them or whatever. And he's like, that's what we're doing when we raise our arms. Like we're asking God, our Father, to pick us up. And I can't describe the feeling that came over me. It was like that, again, that kind of demon coming out of the shadows, looking down at me like, I am so disappointed in you. Like, you raise your hands to me, but you better be on your knees, asking for forgiveness, respecting me, 100% obedient, or I don't want anything to do with you. Like, that's how it felt. And like I've never had to walk out of a service before, ever. And, you know, even through all of those altar calls we experienced, right? Feeling all that guilt and shame, fear, or whatever. I never had to walk out of a service. I had to walk out. And I left the conference. Like, I couldn't even stay. Like that's how God feels to me. And each time, like, I try to approach God intellectually, and I feel like almost convinced, you know? But trying to lean in emotionally, like, that's the response I keep getting. Which kind of goes back to the question that I had at the very beginning, like, you know, I feel like that that's a parallel, you know, between, you know, that this relationship that's very close to me and God that I've drawn and I can't seem to sever. But there's also that voice in the back of my head where, you know, I know you've heard sermons like this, where if you don't view God in the way that we've presented him to you, and you're making up what you want to be true. This good God who comes down and picks you up and says, I know, I saw you messed up over here. I saw you messed up over there. It's okay. We'll get there. Like, that's just so you can live comfortable in your sin and what, like, so anything other than this very threatening, intimidating God feels like fake to me, like wishful thinking or something. I don't know how to get past that.
And that is why, like, that's why I come back to, like, this is all, like, so this is why it's so easy to talk to you, because, like, and I feel zero defensiveness, because this is all in the perception, right? It's not in the truth. You're trying to find the truth, but, you know, it's like you're walking through a room of mirrors looking for a pathway, and everything looks the same. It all looks like you. But there is a pathway. You just got to find it, right? And it's like, you just got to get past that, which is why I come back to, like, I'm excited for you. I'm excited to sit down to breakfast when we talk and you talk about, I think I found a pathway here, you know?
Yeah. 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 I think so much of it just gets back to, like, relationship and being willing to sit with people in their pain. No agendas. That's another thing that I feel from you. Like, you know, I know that you have that hope for me, but I don't feel like that. I don't feel any, like, nudging or pushing in that direction. It's just like, I'm here to listen to you and walk with you on this journey, and yeah, you'll figure it out, and I'm just here for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's like a very foundational component to, like, how to engage with somebody.
Cool.
Yeah. It's brought a lot of healing to me. Still got a long ways to go, though, but...
Don't we all? Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know how you want to close this down necessarily, but I'll say I've enjoyed, you know, I'm excited about this podcast. I'm I'm watching the episodes as they come. Of course, I've had a little more personal view, but I appreciate, and I can speak for a lot of people that, you know, I talked about your genuineness. And I think that's one of the reasons, you know, like on social media, there are hundreds of people, yay, even thousands, that are watching you, and they identify with a lot of what you're saying. Maybe they're afraid to say some of the words, but your openness and honesty, maybe, you know, you throw curse words out there, maybe that's not where they're going, but they can feel what you're feeling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people really appreciate your genuineness, and I would think a lot of the quietness is because of what you talked about. They just don't know what to do or what to say.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways.
Yeah. Well, Nathan, thanks so much for joining me. I don't know. I feel like this was sort of like one of our breakfast sessions where we just, it means so much to me. So
yeah,
thank you. You're a good man.
Love you like a brother. And, I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Nathan.
See you, man.